Earth Sky.
Welcome to Earth Sky 22, your weekly mix of science and music. This week, we're speaking with director Gavin Heffernan of Sunchaser Pictures about his gorgeous time-lapse video of the peak of the Geminid meteor shower. And Deborah Bird will help you navigate to the North Star using the Big Dipper.
Plus a great song by Adam Torres.
Here's your scientist soundbite.
The biggest part is like getting out there into the darkness and getting away from the light pollution. Try and find those really dark nights where the moon is out of the picture. And then just quite a bit of luck that comes around it as well. So you can plan as much as possible, but then you're just sort of at nature's mercy.
That's Gavin Heffernan talking about Death Valley Dreamlapse, his time-lapse video of the Geminid meteor shower. More with him in a few, but first, Emily Howard is here with Science News of the Week. Welcome, Emily.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for having me. The Penn State Department of Geosciences developed an updated model to determine whether discovered planets fall within a habitable zone, where they could be capable of having liquid water and thus sustaining life as we know it. The work, described in a paper published in the Astrophysical Journal, builds on a prior model to offer a more precise calculation of where habitable zones around a star can be found. In essence, the team found that habitable zones are actually farther away from the stars than previously thought.
On January 31st, the Sun erupted with an Earth-directed coronal mass ejection, or CME. Experimental NASA research models, based on observations from the Solar Terrestrial Relations Observatory, or STEREO, and ESA and NASA's Solar and Heliospheric Observatory, show that the CME left the Sun at speeds of around 575 miles per second, which is a fairly typical speed for CMEs. Historically, CMEs at this speed are mild. Stay tuned at EarthSky to see if we experience any geomagnetic activity as a result of this CME.
Networks of narrow ridges found in impact craters on Mars appear to be the fossilized remnants of underground cracks through which water once flowed. That's according to a new analysis by researchers from Brown University. The study, published in the journal Geophysical Research Letters, bolsters the idea that the subsurface environment on Mars once had an active hydrology and could be a good place to search for evidence of past life.
This week we saw some activity along the Pacific Ring of Fire. The U.S. Geological Survey reported a strong 6.7 magnitude earthquake in Chile on January 30th. The earthquake shook buildings as far away as the capital, Santiago, but there were no immediate reports of damage or injuries. There was also a 6.0 earthquake in the southeast of Alaska and a 5.3 off the coast of Oregon on January 29th. No injuries or damage have been reported from either event. That's Science News of the Week. This week's Song of the Week is Rosemarie by Adam Torres off his album Nostra Nova.
Well, I dreamt that you were sleeping by my side, umbrellaed on my shoulder like a child. Kept close to me, you'd never be deep. Now your beauty shone untold, lovely with all loveliness to hold. You'd know you'd never even have to try. I had a little something there for you, a lollipop to make your tongue turn blue. We closed our eyes and watched the world go by. Your lips blew out the bubbles through the wall. We catapulted deep into the pond. Before too long, the dawn had turned to night. Rosemary, carry me from my sleep to eternity. While you watch my heart explode through the hospital window out into the wind and snow in which I'll die. Thank you.
dark and lovely woods we went. We hung our clothes to dry out in the wind. We swung from hanging branches and the vines. My hands held up the swing where we were spun. To want, to give, to spin, to be undone. The world begins to spin and lose its rhyme. Rosemary, carry me from my sleep to eternity. Why? Through the hospital window, out into the wind and snow, in which I'll die.
That was Rosemary by Adam Torres off Nostra Nova. Gavin Heffernan shot and directed the video Death Valley Dreamlapse, which captures the peak of the Geminid meteor shower as seen over Death Valley
in December 2012.
If you haven't seen this video, I recommend checking it out. It's only a few minutes long, and you can find it at earthsky.org. I caught up with Gavin by Skype this week to talk about what it was like to film the meteor shower, and he also talks about some strange sky activity that he and his team witnessed. Gavin, welcome to Earth Sky.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
The Death Valley Dreamlapse was an amazing video, and everybody at Earth Sky loved it, and our audience loved it. Can you tell us a little bit about Sun Chaser Pictures and what you guys do?
Yeah. Well, first, yeah, thank you so much for saying that and for the great coverage on Earth Sky. It really has made a big difference, and just we've been able to meet so many people and hear so many great comments from around the world. So we really appreciate that, first off. Sun Chaser Pictures, yeah, the primary function is usually for fiction films. And so I work out in Los Angeles as a screenwriter, producer, and sometimes director. And the main kind of function out here is for fiction work, but sort of to get away from that, we also sometimes go out into the wilderness to shoot these time-lapse projects, and sometimes in the urban wilderness as well. Because California is in such a perfect place for some of these national parks and the proximity is so close, we are able to kind of get out there and get some of these skies that you see in the video there.
Yeah, so you guys knew the Geminids were peaking, and what day did you go out there?
We went on the 12th, and then came back on the 13th. That was almost kind of a lucky break. We were scheming about an opportunity to get out there to Death Valley for months, if not years, and we sort of had that spot pegged anyway for our possible escape date. And then we just kind of also discovered that it was the meteor shower as well that was coming. So just that, how it sort of helped seal the deal and just make us definitely get out there. And yeah, we're really, really glad we did. We really got lucky with the skies out there.
Yeah, so how long have you been capturing night sky events?
I've been doing time-lapsing for about, 2 or 3 years now. But the night sky stuff really started probably almost about a year and a half ago. I'm still learning about it, so there's still definitely a steep learning curve, but it's actually not quite as hard as you'd think. The biggest part is about getting out there into the darkness and getting away from the light pollution. Mm-hmm. And then the next thing, you really want to avoid the moon if possible. Try and find those really dark nights where the moon is out of the picture. And then just quite a bit of luck that comes around it as well. You can plan as much as possible, but then you're just sort of at nature's mercy, which is kind of the beauty of it as well, mm-hmm. So I guess about a year and a half on the night sky stuff.
Great. So tell us about the UFO.
That's funny. Yeah, that was, I mean, I really kind of put that in the Vimeo description as more of an aside, as just sort of, quote, UFO is in, it's an object that was flying that we could not identify.
Yeah.
But it's kind of, the internet sort of really exploded all over that one. So I've kind of heard 1,000 different theories and arguments and about what it could possibly be. essentially, yeah, we were out there, and it was extremely, extremely quiet night. I put some wind sound effects in the video just for dramatic effect, but the reality is it was actually, as my producer, Michael Darrow, said, you could hear the sand blowing off the dunes. So we didn't hear anything as far as a plane or a helicopter. We really, there was just absolutely nothing audible at all, so it really would rule out those two things. And I know when you look at it, it does kind of look like a regular plane, but if you actually do the calculations on the really long exposures we were shooting, because we were shooting at approximately 30-second exposures, so it works out to about between 10 and 12 minutes for every second of time that passes, it really makes you consider how slow this thing is moving as well. So I don't think it was Martian men from space. That would be cool if it was. I'm always fascinated in that, and it would be, I'm sure that would be a pretty good place for them to show up if they were going to show up. But I think it's more likely that it was some sort of military craft. I know that there's at least one or two bases semi close to there. So I don't think it was little green men, but we're going to go back and see if we can find them, if they are.
Good, good. Were there special effects used in the making of the video? I know it gets really dreamy about 2 minutes in or something like that. What effects were used?
Yeah, okay, so for the Star Trail stuff, it's a program called StarStax, and it's StarStax, and as far as I know, that's still a freeware product, and essentially what that does is it gives you this sort of star trail effect. It essentially merges, say, 300 photos together and creates essentially this natural star trails. So it uses the rotation of the Earth to get that effect. So there's no Photoshop or nothing that's actually drawn on or created in any way. That's just actually the Earth spinning, which really, really kind of blows my mind the first time I saw it. And so when you see the one with the full circle there, that's basically the camera pointing directly north, with the North Star being the eye that you see in the center of that.
Yeah.
And then the Earth turns around that. So it's pretty fascinating. And I had seen a video on Vimeo where they did this from the ISS, from the space station, and they used these star trail effects. And that's how I first heard about it, and it just seemed like something that would be so impossible to accomplish. But when I started digging into it, reading about it, and learning about it, it's actually not that hard. The hard part is kind of getting the right space and the right sky without clouds interfering in it. You really need to get the clear sky for a long duration of time. But it's not rocket science. I'm not a super technical guy, so the fact that if I can pull it off, then it's pretty doable.
That was Gavin Heffernan, director of Death Valley Dreamlabs. We're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science. Listening to Earth Sky 22. You can find us as Earth Sky on Facebook, Earth Sky Science on Twitter, and at earthsky.org. Deborah Bird is here to talk about the North Star and how to find it using the Big Dipper. Welcome, Deborah.
Hello, Mike. So a lot of people say they can't find the Big Dipper.
Really? How do you find the Big Dipper?
But it's pretty easy to find it this time of year. You have to wait a little bit later at night, so you want to go outside when it's, say, 10 or 11 o'clock at night. Look in the northeastern sky. You'll see the Big Dipper coming up. Of course, if you live at a northerly latitude on Earth, you can always see the Big Dipper. It's always in your sky. It's what's called circumpolar. So that means it goes around and around the North Star, and you can always find it. The Big Dipper has a very distinctive shape, looks like a dipper. Actually, there's lots of dippers on the sky's dome, but the Big Dipper, it really is big. It's like the biggest of the dippers mm-hmm. that you see in the sky. There's like the Pleiades star cluster looks like a tiny little dipper.
Mm-hmm.
There is an asterism called the Little Dipper that's harder to see than the Big Dipper. But the Big Dipper is big, looks like a dipper, consists of 7 stars. 4 in the bowl and 3 in the handle. So coming up in the northeast late at night now.
Okay, so how can we use the Big Dipper to find the North Star?
Well, remember I said that the Dipper has a bowl and a handle. So the 4 stars in the bowl of the Big Dipper, you want to focus your mind on those. And think about the 2 stars that are outermost in the bowl. So they're the 2 stars that are farthest away from the handle.
Okay.
Those 2 stars are called Dubhe and Merak. And they're actually called the pointers because they point to the North Star.
And now is the North Star above them? Are they pointing up or are they pointing down?
Well, it doesn't matter whether they're pointing up or down. They could be pointing up, they could be pointing down, because in fact, the Big Dipper can be above the North Star or it can be below the North Star.
Okay.
Because remember I said that the Dipper from northerly latitudes is circumpolar. It goes around and around the pole, kind of like the hands of a clock.
Okay.
And so, you know, you just want to be pointing away from... You know, as if the Dipper were pouring some water out of it, you want to be pointing in the direction that that water would be pouring.
Okay. And the North Star is one of the brightest ones in line with those 2 stars. So
yes.
You're going to notice it whether it's above or below.
That's right. Some people think that the North Star is one of the brightest stars in the sky. And in fact, that's not true. It's a pretty bright star, but it's not one of the brightest stars in the sky. But if you locate the handle and the bowl of the Big Dipper, and you look at the 2 outermost stars in the bowl of the Big Dipper, the pointers, and you extend a line between them about 5.5 times the distance between those 2 stars, between the 2 pointer stars, the first star you come to will be Polaris. And we have pictures of how to do this at our website at earthsky.org. So come to earthsky.org and search for how to find Polaris, and you'll definitely find those pictures.
Okay, great. So what is the Big Dipper?
Well, you know, most of the patterns on our sky's dome are, you know, made up of just sort of randomly associated stars. They're not really connected in space in any way. Mm-hmm. But the stars of the Big Dipper are different. At least, you know, I said that there were 7 stars in the Big Dipper that are, you know, obvious to the eye. 5 of those stars are actually part of what's called the Ursa Major Moving Cluster. So those stars were born together from a single cloud of gas, and they're still more or less moving together through space. So what that means is that if we could extend our human lifespans, you know, much, 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 much longer, and say be around for 100,000 years, we would come back and find the patterns in the sky look very different because the stars would have moved away from each other. But the stars of the Big Dipper would still look kind of like a dipper because of those 5 stars in the Ursa Major Moving Cluster. And by the way, they're called Ursa Major because the Big Dipper is considered to be, it's not a constellation, it's what's called an asterism, which is a noticeable pattern on the sky's dome within a larger constellation. The constellation of the Big Dipper is Ursa Major. So this is the Ursa Major Moving Cluster.
Cool. I didn't know that. What else can we look for in the Big Dipper?
Well, there's one other thing that's really, really easy to see in the Big Dipper. And remember, we were focusing on the bowl of the Dipper to mm-hmm. find Polaris, the North Star. But you want to now look at the handle of the Big Dipper. And the handle extends off from the bowl. It consists of 3 stars. It's kind of a curved shape. The second star from the end of the Big Dipper's handle is what's known as an optical double star. You can look up there with just the eye, and you think it's one star there. You may have seen it many times and just thought to yourself, oh, there's just one star there. But if you really look at it, you'll see there's actually 2 stars there. So the brighter of those stars is called Mizar, and the fainter one is called Alcor.
So it looks like it's just one star, but if you look really closely, you can see 2 stars.
That's right. And those 2 stars have had many names over the course of history. One of the most famous names is the Horse and Rider. So that's Mizar and Alcor, second to the end in the handle of the Big Dipper. And by the way, Mike, there's really 6 stars there. So it's taken, over the past several decades, it's taken some pretty sophisticated astronomical equipment to find all six of these stars, and you know, maybe there's even more stars there. It also used to be thought that these two stars, Mizar and Alcor, which we can see with just our eye, weren't actually physically associated in space, that they weren't actually orbiting each other. But now it's thought that they are gravitationally bound. Alcor is thought to be two stars, a double star system. Mizar is thought to be at least a quadruple star system. And those two star systems are orbiting each other in a very intricate way.
Wow. So something really cool to think about when you're looking up at the Big Dipper.
That's right.
Cool. Well, thanks a lot, Deborah.
Thank you, Mike.
Earth Sky's Deborah Bird. And that's our show. Thanks for joining us. This week's show was recorded in Earth Sky Studio in Austin, Texas, live music capital of the world. Special thanks to our musical contributors, Adam Torres, Maneja Beto, Sleep Good, 100 Flowers, and the Black and White Years. Until next week, be good to one another. I'm Michael Brennan. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
There are too many artists, too much art, and not enough genius, I believe. Science is the art of the next age. There are so many artists, too much art, and not enough reason, I'm afraid. Silence is the song of the next age. But what we don't know won't hurt us. What we don't know won't keep us up at night. What we don't know won't hurt us. Oh, but we don't know, but we don't know, but we don't. What you don't know won't hurt ya. What you don't know won't have you terrified. What you don't know won't hurt ya. Oh, but you don't know, but you don't know, but you don't.